Welcome to ChrisCast, Episode 3, Season 2. Today's episode is, the topic is shame, fear, and authority are no longer good points of pain or points of leverage to make people do what you want them to do. It's no longer a way of convincing people to comply with orders. I will go into details about that. I will tell you why I think it is. As all of my podcasts are, none of it is based at all in a rigorous academy. It's all my hopes, dreams, opinions, and thoughts. So when we get back from the break and a little bit of advertisement, we will talk about the subject of how shame, fear, and a position of authority are no longer good enough leverage points, points of pain tools, command and control tools that will make a public, a people, a culture, a country, do what you ask of them, do what you command of them, and why. Talk to you right after the break. Welcome back. These thoughts are really rare, really raw. So, again, this is Chris Abraham, Season 2, Episode 3 of ChrisCast, and I am going to think these things through real time. I don't have a notepad in front of me, except for this one. A little Moleskine pad, and all it has are the three words, shame, fear, authority. I thought of these. First, this episode was going to be about shame, which is to say most of what the people of America, I only have an American experience. Honestly, I only have a Washington, D.C., Mid-Atlantic experience. I live in Virginia, and I know that from my experience, just from NPR and television and radio and podcasts and alerts and newspapers and so forth, that during our time of coronavirus, one of the only plans that anybody has is to use shame and fear to combat coronavirus and make people comply with regards to mandates. And the mandates are all based on authority. The authority of being the head of the CDC, the authority of being the head of infectious disease of the United States, the authority of being Surgeon General, the authority of being a doctor, the authority of being an academic, the authority of being a PhD or an MD or an Esquire, the authority of being the official organ of your state, local, or federal government. Ironically, that authority, for reasons I will talk about later, does not and no longer and hasn't for the last 4 years included the White House or the executive of the government because, you know, Trump's a moron. And the fact that Trump is in office is probably going to come up during this episode. We'll see. Like I said, I'm sort of running raw on this. I do not have a lot of ideas in terms of what I've written down anywhere. So shame is being used to shame you because in a very old church sort of way, which is if you don't wear a mask, you are a sinner. If you go out with your friends, you are a sinner. If you hang out in groups, you're a sinner. If you secretly rendezvous with your lover, you are a sinner. These are not religious sins at all. In fact, one of the points of shame is thou shalt not congregate at church and thou shalt not sing loudly to the Lord. But they are using the language of the church. They are using shame, fear, and authority to control and manipulate at least people in the mid-Atlantic. Not so much in Virginia, which kind of is the FU state, but definitely in Maryland and DC, there's extreme levels of public compliance. When I say public compliance, you might have listened to a recent episode I wrote, or I shared with you, about the extreme levels of hypocrisy. And listen, I didn't even think, I don't, you know, nobody thinks about other people, except ever since Trump, and ever since the Me Too movement, and ever since Black Lives Matter, people who I've been on social media with since 2007, who haven't anything but a narcissistic bone in their body, or just a normal, like, family, friends, you know, kind of worldview, all of a sudden start preaching, man, preaching. Men who in at no point suggested at any point that they were even allies of anybody started coming out and protesting too much. Hey Google, what is the Shakespearean quote, "Thou doth protest too much"?
According to Wikipedia, "the lady doth protest too much," methinks, is a line from the play Hamlet by William Shakespeare. It is spoken by Queen Gertrude in response to the insincere overacting of a character in the play within a play created by Prince Hamlet to prove his uncle's guilt in the murder of his father, the King of Denmark.
Wow, that's perfect. That is so good. Yes, overacting. Wow, that's a word that I hadn't even thought about. There has been an extreme amount of overacting in support of shame, fear, and authority. There must be a lot of people, I know, because people are getting sick, physically sick over climate change, physically sick over white supremacy, physically sick over their perception that Donald Trump is in fact Pol Pot, plus Hitler, plus Stalin, plus Mao Zedong. However, I think that there's a lot of virtue signaling going on. And I believe that the virtue signaling is a manifestation, an essential manifestation of the game of not me, right? It's a hot potato game where the quicker you can get someone off your tail through committing in very much an inquisition sort of way. "I deny Satan. I deny Satan and accept the church. I am not Jewish. I'm not Muslim. I am not Protestant. I am Catholic. I love Jesus. Jesus is my Lord. I love God. God is my Lord. I love Mary. Mary is my Lord. I love the Holy Spirit. I accept the Holy Spirit in my heart." Except that playbook is being used to combat climate change, to combat coronavirus, and to manipulate you. Now, young people are easy to manipulate with shame, fear, and authority, especially smart young people, because parents have been humiliating their children into high performance in school high grades, high performance, excellent university, et cetera, humiliating them as long as college has been an entryway to climbing the ladder of accomplishment in the world. It's the getting into the best college possible is the best way from an immigrant class person to achieve all that is holy, which is a position as a doctor or a lawyer or an Indian chief. So, ooh, is that racist? Yikes, I'm sorry. I feel shame, fear, and I bow to the authority of the politically correct police. On that note, let me collect my thoughts and I'll be right back after this break. Welcome back to season 2, episode 3 of ChrisCast. I was just thinking about shame, fear, and authority, those three leverages, those three leverages that are used on the fulcrum of society, against the fulcrum of society and culture in order to make things happen, make things move, and in order to organize people for or against something, right? It's not necessarily clear what it is for or against. In order to maintain moral high ground, it's very incredibly important to always make sure that when you're using shame, fear, and authority, that you make it all about the best interest of the individual and the community and the citizenry and the country, the best interest. Of, and this can be civil rights. This can be, and it's always, almost always for the mothers and children. It's for the mothers and children. And my premise today is that as we move forward in time, shame is certainly going to stop working. Shame. I remember shame. I grew up Catholic. I know what shame is. And I knew that at some point it was deeply shameful if someone found out that you had to go bankrupt. Ooh. It was really shameful if someone found out that you were gay. Ooh. It was really shameful if someone found out that you were barren or that you couldn't make babies. Ooh. It was really, really shameful if you or your family had ever been arrested or gone to jail. Ooh. It's really shameful if you are poor or if you don't go to church or any of these things. Oh my God. It's shameful if you are not manly or feminine. It's super shameful if you are a woman older than 25 and unmarried. I mean, all these social construct and mores have always been based on shame, shame, shame. Shame can be mixed in with a little fear, right? Oh, you are 26 and unmarried. You were never going to have a husband, or ooh, you didn't go to college. You're never gonna be successful, or so many things. The shames are attributed to disappointment, being banished in many cases. I can't tell you how many people banished me for just not accepting in my heart that Trump was literally Hitler and was literally going to kill all the Jews and was literally going to kill all the gays and was literally going to kill all the children and was going to literally kill all the black people. I didn't believe any of that. That was all projection, I guess. I don't know, but and shame really only works if there's no checks and balances. If you can't find out easily that in fact it's shame is a tool of manipulation and control. It's a tool of manipulation, command and control. And if you have the internet and you realize that it's really easy to deal with the fact that you've had a bankruptcy or that you're poor or that you've lost your home or that you're never going to get married or you don't even want kids. The most beautiful thing about the internet that I think it is that birds of a feather flock together. You know, you can't be shamed now for being gay. You can't be shamed now for being trans. You can't be shamed now for having a divorce or for not loving your wife or husband or spouse. You can't be even shamed these days for cheating. You can't even use cheating on your spouse as good spycraft leverage anymore. Because, I mean, in a modern world, a lot of people have understood that that marriage is a very complicated thing, and it's a partnership between two people, and as we enter into a future where polyamory and thruples and as this corruption of shame and fear and authority start to fall asunder, we will more and more create things that are better bespoken. Are better bespoke to us, better customized to the cut of our jib. And hey, Google, what does the cut of my jib mean?
Here's the definition of the cut of someone's jib: someone's appearance or demeanor.
Wow, I know words. Anyway, and it's going to be, and that's the problem with the internet. That's the reason why everybody hates the internet so much, because it's extremely empowering. I mean, look how desperately the ruling class of authority, the authority, I was listening to NPR this morning, which was the impetus of recording this. I'll talk about it right after the break. Thanks for being here. I'll talk to you in a second. Authority freaking hates the internet. You want to know why? Because authority doesn't like to be questioned. Every single, I listen to NPR religiously, but it's a religion that I no longer respect. It's a religion that I enjoy. It's a familiar religion. It relaxes me. It's like when I started going back to Episcopal Church, St. James's. It reminded me of my Catholic upbringing. It had frankincense and myrrh. It had aspergillism. Hey, Google, what is an aspergillism?
Sorry, I don't know how to help with that. Here are other things you can try.
Hey, Google, what is the thing they use in a church to spray holy water? Aspergillium.
Sorry.
What is an aspergillium?
Here's the definition of aspergillum, an implement for sprinkling holy water.
Aspergillum. Aspergillium. Oh, God. Aspergillum. I'm such an idiot. Anyway, and all that fun stuff, right? I wasn't into Catholic church with acoustic guitar and kumbaya. I was into really old church with and the great thing about the Episcopal Church versus the Catholic Church is Episcopal churches don't care whether or not you believe in God. They are happy to have you as an agnostic, curious, Christ curious, God curious, Episcopal Church curious, member of the church. You can even I had a an affair with with the head of my vestry, and she and I had some pillow talk afterwards, and she didn't believe in God anymore, but yet she was the head of the. Hey Google, what's the name of the head of a vestry?
Sorry, I don't know how to help with that. Here are other things you can try.
What did you name your dog? What is Lil Pump's real name? What is Sting's real name? Never mind. Never mind. And it doesn't matter in the Episcopal Church, which is so, which means that I get to have the comfort of the fetish of the old church, and have my prayers and have my smoke and mirrors, have my mystery. Have my miracles, have my beautiful, beautiful Mary, and all those things. And I don't even need to believe that they're the one God, the one Lord, the one Christ. And that's becoming more and more evident in modern society. The thing that Christians hate so very much is they hate what's called buffet Christianity, which is you are buffet religion, buffet spirituality, which is you go in there and you like Sizzler salad bar, or like Golden Corral, you go in there and you make your own plate. You do not accept the plate given to you by authority. And now that we have the internet, oh, don't even know. Did I? Am I? I don't even know where I'm going, but I was talking, I think I was talking about NPR and the Times and CNN and MSNBC. When nowadays every headline includes things like baseless claims without evidence. The powers that be, the authority structures in America, are losing control of this ship completely. People don't believe scientists, they don't believe medical doctors, they don't believe politicians, they do believe the politicians you don't want them to believe, they don't believe the politicians who are vetted and went through the proper channels. No matter how many official sources for fact checks, no matter how many official fact checks there are at the Post, no matter how many fact checks there are online, no matter how often Twitter or Facebook intends to inline those the facts are disputed, please check a reliable source. The more this happens, then the lady doth protest too much. And it doesn't matter whether or not what they're saying is true. Doesn't matter if it's God's truth. It's all hearts and minds. And that'll be the next segment, hearts and minds versus command and control. I don't know if y'all are following me. I don't understand what I'm talking about myself. So we'll come back after the break. Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back. It's season two, episode three of Chris Cast. My name's Chris Abraham. What is you have to Hey Google, what's the saying? You attract more bees with honey?
On the website english.stackexchange.com, they say, You catch more flies with honey than vinegar, or sometimes you catch more flies with honey is an English proverb.
That is, you're going to get what you want in the proverb flies, but in the any goal, with sweetness rather than acidity. Thank you. I knew it was you get more flies, because honestly, I do know that bees are not attracted to honey. Bees produce honey. Bees are attracted to flowers and pollen. They're mostly attracted to flowers that pop on their in their vision, which is different than ours, and highlights but you know what I'm saying. So the lady doth protest too much, and you attract more flies with honey than vinegar. A spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down, the medicine go down, the medicine go down. Just a spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down in the most delightful way. Oh, what happened? Oy vey. So, with those three truisms, no longer can you force-feed American public. There's just too many alternate belief systems. There's just too many other checks and balances. You can't blame everything on the Russians and have anybody believe you at the end of the day. Once you blame one thing on the Russians and it's soundly debunked, not by the authorities, but by you and your friends, once you and your friends call bullshit, right? Okay, so like how many teen dramas, teen comedies, and dumb TV programs show a room full of whippersnapper, know-it-all kids who are completely dunking on their stupid school teacher, right? The whippersnappers are like, "You don't know anything, Mr. Blah, blah, blah," you know, dunking on him, putting whoopee cushions underneath his, on his chair, putting glue, gluing him places, making him lose his toupee. I mean, humiliating the authority figures is a time-honored tradition. The only people who show in America have ever shown respect for school teacher are teachers' pets. Now, I dare say that in the structure of modern America, the teachers' pets are only 20%. And the teachers' pets, oh, good Lord, everybody hates them. Everybody hates everybody. Everybody, by everybody, I mean the majority of people, hate the editor of the school paper. They hate the AV club kids. They hate the theater kids. They hate the drama kids. They hate the band kids. I mean, there hasn't been a national merit scholar since, I guess, I don't know how cool my buddy Mark Harrison was in school. He had disdain and contempt for everybody who went to school with him, because he was, you know, 150 IQ kind of kid. Nobody likes the gifted kids. The gifted, what is the, they have a full term for it. Hey Google, what are gifted programs called?
On the website publish.gwinnett.k12.gar.us, they say, the gifted program is called Focus at the elementary school level, Probe at the middle school level, and is referred to as Gifted Education and Quest in high school.
Interesting. Accelerated programs in gifted education. Very interesting. That's all Georgia information, so I don't know if that's nationwide. I think they still believe that Jesus rode a Tyrannosaurus Rex in Georgia. But, yeah. You need to win people by hearts and minds. This requires special forces strategy. This requires hearts and minds war. Hey Google, what's the theory behind hearts and minds?
According to Wikipedia, winning hearts and minds is a concept occasionally expressed in the resolution of war, insurgency, and other conflicts, in which one side seeks to prevail not by the use of superior force, but by making emotional or intellectual appeals to sway supporters of the other side.
Yeah, well, that's opt-in, right? The Montagnards in the highlands of Vietnam and Laos and Cambodia, they, you know, had several ways of doing it. They could accept the American intervention forces as allies, or they could use them for the protection and support and possibly the immigration ability to get out of poverty. There's so many ways why people might comply with you. Sometimes it's not worthy looking a gift horse in the mouth. Hey Google, what does the term look a gift horse in the mouth mean?
Here's the definition of look a gift horse in the mouth. Find fault with something that has been received as a gift or favor.
So, on one hand, if people are doing what you've asked them to do, you shouldn't question that. However, if, you know, for example, an episode or two ago, I did an entire hour on the concept of hypocrisy and saying that the same people who profess love of God, extreme following of the Ten Commandments, and the remission of sin. Hey Google, what does remission of sin mean?
On the website vocabulary.com, they say, end the act of absolving or remitting. Formal redemption is pronounced by a priest in the sacrament of penance. Synonyms: absolution, remission, remittal types, indulgence. The remission by the Pope of the temporal punishment in purgatory that is still due for sins even after absolution.
Well, the same person who professes remission of sin amongst his flock might be the same person who bangs hookers, right, and sniffs coke off of someone's ass, right? There's that separation, that bifurcation. What is it? Virgin in the kitchen, whore in bed. You know, the virgin whore complex. And I do not mean this to be gender specific. I was a virgin. I was a whore. I'm a virgin again. One day I'll be a whore. In this world where gender doesn't need to be so specific, I think that both men and women can have a Virgin Mary and Mary Mary Magdalene kind of separation. But you don't expect it to be, I mean, that strong. I wonder if Fauci gets spankings from a dominatrix. Wouldn't that be great? Hey Google, how tall is Anthony Fauci?
According to Wikipedia, Fauci grew up
Catholic, Google, but now... Hey Google, how tall is Anthony Fauci?
According to Wikipedia, Fauci attended the Jesuit Regis High School in Manhattan's Upper East Side, where he captained the school's basketball team despite standing only 5 feet 7 in tall.
You gotta be quite a charmer if at 5 foot 7, and I dare say he's 5 foot 2, if you can seduce an entire country to willful compliance. Although, like I said, considering that Christmas was the most traveled day since coronavirus began in March, since the lockdowns began, I dare say that nobody's listening to anything. People are saying they're doing it. This is an Eddie Haskell situation. America is going through a deep Eddie Haskell. Hey Google, who is Eddie Haskell?
Here's a summary from Wikipedia. Edward Clark Haskell is a fictional character on the Leave It to Beaver television situation comedy, which ran on CBS from October 4, 1957 to 1958 and on ABC from 1958 to 1963. He was played by Ken Osmond.
So Eddie Haskell was on Leave It to Beaver, and he was the charming, lying little kid. He would tell stories, he'd talk stories, he'd lie to people's faces. He was a rapscallion. Hey, Google, what is a rapscallion?
Here's the definition of rapscallion: archaic, humorous, a mischievous person.
Damn, I know all the words, but I don't know what they mean. I know this language phonetically. And he did lip service. He would tell you anything you needed to hear in order so that you would leave him alone to do whatever he wanted to do. America's getting really good at that. We might have always been really good at that. Hey, Google, what's the definition of scofflaw?
Here's the definition of scofflaw: informal. A person who flouts the law, especially by failing to comply with a law that is difficult to enforce effectively.
That is, by definition, what's going on now, right? The laws against coronavirus are completely unenforceable. My buddy Keith always used to tell me that the perception of a police officer around every corner, the perception of constant contact, the perception that there was someone always watching you, the perception that school marm had eyes on the back of her head, all of these things create a perception of enforcement, perception of laws and boundaries that are completely unenforceable and that require the good faith of a majority of the population in order to work. If there was a spontaneous and comprehensive rebuke of the power of authority using the using fear and shame as support structures, then everything would completely fall apart and nobody would be able to do anything about it, you know? Even as my friend Mark jokes about Boston Robotics or whatever they're called and their near future of soldier bots, you can't buy enough soldier bots and drones and satellites. They barely can keep up with roving tribes of Taliban and Afghani rebels. You can barely keep track of them. You know, you only have a room full of, there's only so many people per war room. This might be different when everything's relinquished to an AI that can, you know, that lives in a world of nanoseconds and can respond. But even then, you need to have a chain of command. You need to get authority. You need to get a writ from a judge. You need to get a warrant. You need to do all of these things. And all of these things require like rubber stamping. Hey, Google, what does rubber stamping mean?
Here's the definition of rubber stamp: approve automatically without proper consideration.
Damn, I'm smart, but I don't know what I'm even saying, but that works. Even with rubber stamping, ka-tunk, 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 like in the TV show MASH, you know, where they were always tricking the officer into signing documents that had nothing to do with, you know, that were the approval without the person knowing of hijinks down the road. Even with black budgets and with discretion-based authority and with all kinds of unencumbered black ops type of crazy the future sucks, like we're all doomed kind of authority, there are only so many people who have sworn an oath to be a baddie. Even if you start off offsourcing to mercenaries and private security, there's only so many people in 2% or 3% of America who have the training or wherewithal. Or honestly, people are generally good. So finding someone who will be an effective jackbooted thug, who will be tested by war, and who would be willing, gladly, without any reservations and without any associated trauma disorders, to pop caps into people's heads, to double tap their chest and shoot them in the forehead or in the back of the head. Like, those are few and far between. They're not as, I mean, even though we have, hey Google, how many guns are owned by Americans?
According to Wikipedia, the Small Arms Survey stated that U.S. civilians alone account for 393 million of the worldwide total of civilian-held firearms.
There are 120.5 firearms for every 100 residents. Anyway, I guarantee you that that there are not 393 million people in America who are willing to put a bullet in your brain. That's definitely a rarer thing. Otherwise, James Bond wouldn't be so cool. Even John le Carré books aren't completely. I mean, if you watch movies, there's people shooting each other in dark alleys everywhere. But it's hard to find people who are willing to do the evil deeds of authority figures in order to force compliance on a big level. And we see how that ha what happens from that, right? You can see what happened to the Soviet Union, which was a high enforcement country. You can see what happened to Eastern Germany, which is sorry, high authority country. It just doesn't work. People need to not be shamed into thinking if they don't do what authority figures say, they're stupid, because they don't think they're stupid, and at least half the country thinks you're stupid. And by you, I mean you authority figures. By and we also know that that only 20% of our country is actually actually I don't know. Hey Google, what percentage of the American public has an advanced degree?
13.1%. Here's a summary from the website census.gov. About 13.1% of US adults have an advanced degree.
So I would say that only 13% of all y'all are actually the ruling class. I would say that only 13% of you all, hey Google, what percentage of Americans have professional degrees?
13.1%. On the website census.gov, they say about 13.1% have a master's, professional degree, or doctorate.
So only 13.1% of you run the rest of the country. Now that's only a little over 10%. And then you've got people who are liberal and Democrat and so forth. And to be honest, you're trying to 10% of America, and I would say that this is the enlightened 10%, only 10% of Americans are trying to ride a bull that is 90% people who don't even have a JD, an MD, a master's, even a master's degree. I bet you didn't know that it was only 13.1%, up from 8.6, did it say? You are over, completely out of your depth. your depth. And the only way you can create a giant paper tiger, the only way you can hide a wizard behind the curtain is by getting rid of the internet. The internet is going to undermine all of the puppeteering, all of this messaging, this top down. While you're fighting top down, which is what mainstream media is, the rest of the country and the rest of the world is fighting bottom up. And if you've ever read the book, Clue Train Manifesto, like seeks like, and there are way more people, hand to God, there are way more people in this country who watch Tim Pool, who listen to Coast to Coast, who listen to Mark Levin, who listen to hey Google, who owns InfoWars?
Sorry, I don't know how to help with that. Here are other things you can try.
Anyway, you know the crazy dude with the tinfoil hat. But you know, it's really going to be hard to continue this forward. There's going to have to be some drastic, something drastic, some way to curtail such constant. You know, that's another thing. I'll be right back.
Oh, thank you.
I think what I meant to even do today, and we'll talk about this in another episode, is the whole concept of conspiracy theory. Using authority to shame people into believing what they believe is conspiracy theory, is bunk that was debunked, at some point your derision of someone gets so insulting that at some point, instead of saying, yes, you're right, it's just, there's no chemtrails in the sky, Jesus is, and God is the sky daddy, we live in a science-based world, the new priest, forget about my priest, it's now scientists, it's now medical doctors, it's now the holy 13.1%, so mote they be. And with this replacement strategy of making people feel like they're foolish for believing in their leprechauns or for believing in their angels or for believing in the Bigfoot or space aliens or the ever presence of Jesus Christ, their personal savior in their life. At some point, there's going to be a point of diminishing return where people turn around en masse and say, fuck you, we didn't agree to this, and we're bigger than you. And that American, and very literally that American elephant, the pachyderm, the GOP elephant, that elephant is going to become untethered from the very, very, very weak lead that has been keeping it, the American public, has been pretty, pretty pacific, pretty passive, pretty peaceful, and you know, I don't include Black Lives Matter. I don't include immigrants. I don't include, these are all minority factions in the American lumbering oath. You know, trans people are only 1% of the entire or less. Hey, Google, what percentage of Americans are trans?
0.42%. Here's a summary from the website en.wikipedia.org. Studies from several nations have produced a statistical range of 1.2 to 6.8% of the adult population identifying as LGBT.
So, only 1.2 to 6.8 are even LGBT. Hey Google, what percent of Americans are African American? Hey Google, what percentage of Americans are black?
Its black population is 13.4.
Hey Google, what percentage of Americans are immigrants?
13.7%. On the website pewresearch.org, they say there were a record 44.8 million immigrants living in the U.S. in 2018, making up 13.7% of the nation's population.
So, there is a big majority in America who don't believe anything they're told anymore. The African American Black Lives Matter, they definitely don't believe a lot of things that they're told anymore. They're unwilling to comply. They're non-compliant people, which I think is brilliant. They're revolutionary people. They do not want to stand for the status quo. They're unwilling to accept the status quo. The LGBTQ plus community is unwilling to stand for the status quo. More and more, the immigrant communities are unwilling to stand for the status quo. I'm hoping more and more homeless communities of homelessness, communities experiencing homelessness, communities experiencing unhousedness. I don't even know what the phrases are anymore. Are unhappy with that. And at the end of the day, I think that people who are experiencing poverty, no matter what their color, and the working class, I think that this is all comes down not to race wars, but it comes down to class wars. And I believe that in many cases, it is the fact that more and more communities that have been docile till now, or have been afraid and ashamed. That fear and shame are choke chains that you put on yourself. They're types of self-control. They are, if you will, the ego and superego controlling a type of id that the internet now is happy to release. Hey Google, what are the id, ego, and superego?
According to Wikipedia, the id, ego, and superego are a set of three concepts in psychoanalytic theory describing distinct, interacting agents in the psychic apparatus. The three agents are theoretical constructs that describe the activities and interactions of the mental life of a person.
Hey Google, what is the id?
According to Wikipedia, the id, ego, and superego are a set of three concepts in psychoanalytic
theory. Hey, Google,
stop.
We're not getting anywhere from that. Anyway, the id is the base nature of man. The ego is the self-aware nature of man. And the superego is the part of the unknown force that balances the superego is the intermediary, if you will, that balances the devil on one shoulder and the angel on the other. So it's really, in a reductive way, the ego and the id are diametrical opposing forces, not necessarily good or bad, but more base. It is more base. Desires, passions, lusts, hungers, appetites, And the super ego is the if you will the controller of those things, the moderator, if you will. Anyway, I could talk about this all day, and I apparently have. This might be the longest podcast ever, but I just want everybody to know that the country doesn't look the way you think it is. The country isn't nearly as sophisticated as anybody thinks it is. I don't think anybody thinks America is a sophisticated country. I think it's proven by our lack of interest in educating anybody. Public schools are, if you will, prison light, and there's no incentive. There's very little incentive for anybody but middle class and upper middle class and rich people to pursue a high culture, a haute couture. That's not true. Haute couture is fashion. A high culture, if you will, exploration of the world, including science, music, language, history, literature, etc. Ethics. I mean, there's so many things that you learn when you go through a liberal education at university level and then go to graduate school and then are surrounded by smart people, and it is a positive feedback loop. Otherwise, you can end up stagnant. And if I have any advice, it's to stop calling people stupid where they can hear you. I mean, I know you can't handle it. I can't believe how much contempt you have for people who, if they're white, like the kind of contempt that one has for a white dude in America who is under the same threats and challenges and shames and insecurities, but is a white family in white America, is so different than the kind of compassion, the public compassion, one has for a person of color who's going through the same experience. I understand that they are different things entirely, and that there is a entitlement associated with being born with white skin, but it doesn't feel like that when you're in the body, right? When you're in the body, it doesn't feel like that. You still feel, I've lost my wife, I've lost my kids, I have suicidal ideation, which is not how they would say that. I am desperate, I am hungry, I am lost. I feel like my life has no meaning. I don't have fulfilling work, etc., etc., etc. So, at the end of that day, you have the same kind of desperation that anybody in that personal life experience would have. Desperation, devil may care, and then at that point, shame doesn't matter anymore. That security blanket, that security guard, that security lock, those manacles are gone. And then at some point, fear becomes so overwhelming that you basically say, fuck it. If I was prepared, I would quote Risky Business. Oh, what is the quote? Let me see if I can find it. Guys, you'll love this. I'm going to pause and come back with that quote. Hey guys, I'm back. Season 2, Episode 3 of ChrisCast. Here is an excerpt from Tom Cruise in Risky Business that you, if you haven't heard it, you should hear it. If you have, this is a nice reminder.
No guts, good.
Yeah. You know, only when it came right down to it, I just wasn't attracted to him.
Should never stop you.
He seemed too big.
He could have worked out.
I figured I would have gotten into trouble somehow.
Sometimes you gotta say, what the fuck? Make your move.
That's easy for you to say. I mean, you're all set. You're probably going to Harvard. Me, I don't want to make a mistake, jeopardize my future. Joel, you want to know something? What? Every now and then, say what the fuck. What the fuck gives you freedom? Freedom brings opportunity. Opportunity makes your future.
Miles, be right there.
So your folks are going out of town. Tomorrow. You got the place all to yourself.
Yeah.
What the fuck? If you can't say it, you can't do it.
No, I don't think so.
I just got off the telephone with Bill Rutherford. Apparently.
Anyway, that is that. There is one more scene, which is this one, which is awesome. So here's one more scene you can enjoy before we close out this episode.
If you have more than $10,000 in the bank and you don't know this, I guarantee you that you're missing out on a fortune. Real estate and the stock market are earning a...
Sorry about that.
Your stats are very respectable. You've done some solid work here. But it's not quite Ivy League now, is it?
You know, Bill, there's one thing I've learned in all my years. Sometimes you gotta say, what the fuck? Make your move.
I beg your pardon?
So, how we doing?
Looks like University of Illinois.
Oh, white people problems, right? Am I right? Couldn't be a nicer neighborhood that Tom Cruise in Risky Business lived in. But if you haven't seen that movie, very sexy scene on a train. Lots of fun, very funny. I don't know if it's aged very well in terms of politically correct police, but you should check it out. Fun movie. Very interesting. Anyway, I hope I made some sense. This is probably the longest episode I've ever done. I'm going to come back with the going goodbye, goodbye stuff and talk to you soon. Welcome back, Season 2, Episode 3, Chris Abraham. You can reach me in any many sundry ways. First of all, I'd like you to go to your favorite podcasting platform and like me, subscribe to me, give me thumbs up, write a review, write a comment. I think those things are good for the algos. You can reach me at Chris Abraham everywhere. YouTube.com/Chris Abraham, Facebook.com/Chris Abraham, Twitter.com/Chris Abraham, LinkedIn.com/in/Chris Abraham, ChrisAbraham.com is my website, Chris-Abraham.com is my Tumblr. My phone number is +1, which is the U.S. or Canada. 202-352-5051. 202 is the DC area code. I live in sexy South Arlington. 202-352-5051. You can text me. You can WhatsApp me. You can leave your hat on. You can signal me. If you call me, I won't answer unless we have a date. If you want a date, you can set one up at calendly, calendly.com, /Chris Abraham/15. That'll be a 15-minute get-together on a call. Happy to do it. I'm at Chris on No Agenda Social. I'm at Chris on Giravik.su. My email is chris@abraham.su. The reason why I have an SU address, which is Soviet Union, which is mostly deprecated, but is still being serviced, is because Abraham was the Vater Abraham hatte sieben Söhne, because Father Abraham had seven sons, and seven sons had Father Abraham. He is the prophet of Christianity, Judaism, and Islam. He is the trunk of the tree of God in terms of the Semitic religions. So they're hard to find. And I've always envied people who've had firstname@lastname.com. And so the only one I could find was .su. And luckily, I'm savvy enough to secure one from the Russian Federation. So there's that. Anyway, thank you very much. I do these periodically. This is season 2, episode 3. Each season is 50 episodes, so it's arbitrary in terms of timeline. But there you go. Thank you for coming. Thank you for staying all the way through the entire episode, and I hope you learned something. Please contact me. Oh, if you want to support the podcast, go to anchor.fm/Chris Abraham/support, and I assume you can spend money on me there. Ciao. Take care. Aloha. Mahalo. Tschüss. Auf Wiedersehen. A biento. A tout à l'heure. Hasta la mañana, hasta la próxima. There we are. Ciao.